Thank you, David. Thanks for inviting me. Just like you, I'm looking forward to hearing what I've got to say. So let's start. I'd like to dedicate this presentation to my mentor, Jan Lamres, fondly known as Lumpies. Some of you may have met him. He is one of the two co-authors of the South African Soil Classification, fondly known as the Red Book, which came out in 1977, and the Blue Book, which came out in 1991. And you will see he passed away on the 22nd of September of this year. We classify for a myriad of reasons, and I took this from Bill, organizing knowledge, providing maximum knowledge with least cognitive effort, Erika. Organize the environment, reveal relationships, learn new relationships, provide objects for research, and to establish group for predicting behavior, determining the best use, establish estimated the productivity, identify problems, and for information transfer. At the same time, the author's quote from Klein 61 that a classification should guard against rigor mortis. Now, in this regard, rigor mortis can also be set on by a data overload, so that we just have too much data. It's almost like getting stuck in muck or clay, and that we really become prisoners of the path that we chose. And that's why I'm trying to propose something different. Alfred, this is for you. The talk yesterday of Alfred, that the use really of soil classification is declining. And at the same time, the use of soil descriptive terms is increasing. So this implies that the authors of papers have an inherent need to communicate soil information, but at the same time, there's an aversion towards classification. And my question really is why. So this brings me to the aim of this presentation, is to highlight some of the challenges, to propose some solutions, and really come up with my title of the talk is. So why is there this decline in classification? And Alfred, if there was time, I would have asked you yesterday this, but I couldn't get this from your paper. First, I think there's ignorance from authors. There's maybe ignorance from the editors of journals. There's a perceived difficulty, and maybe that difficulty is real. Erika, you all have that thing of the Arctic horizons with the ands and the ors, and that it still confuses me. There's the cost involved with classification, and that really relates to the analyses that we require in order to do a good classification. And then lastly, and these are just things I came up with, maybe the classification does not really convey the information that the author of that paper wants to convey. They want to convey something else. And then really, these are my proposals. I start from the pretext that classification is a human trait. And you just need to look at my knife draw to see I've got a knife class, and there's a fork class, and spoons and whatnot. We classify everything around us. And in that regard, maybe we should look at Miller's rule, 7 plus minus 2 with a maximum of 15. Then there's the whole thing of value versus cost. And for me, this is really the crux of the matter. Is our classification costing us more than the value that we gain from it? And are we not getting it precisely wrong? And this is something that I read from the author is Nassim Nicholas Taleb. He's my second most favorite author. And he's mentioned that architects are very exact and very precise, but they're not really getting to the gist of the matter. And I want to show you this example from Sanimark, which is on the next slide. So I'm going to pass there. And I think that when we develop a classification, it should be something that is generally acceptable. It should be accessible. It should be available to everybody. And then I think we should guard against regional preferences and peculiarities, wanting to be everything for everybody. If you look at my knife drawer, all the knives in there are not similar. Some of the knives are long and some are sharp and some are short, but they're all in the knife class. In my mind, I don't need a specific class for every single knife. Anyway, and then lastly, I'm not going to expand on this, is that whole thing of a map versus a chart. And if you think about Pennsylvania, the state of Pennsylvania, it's more or less a parallelogram. You don't need to know the exact boundaries of Pennsylvania to place it in your cognitive realm. It's more or less a parallelogram. And I think it's called the Keystone State. But that basically explains the difference between a chart, the Keystone, versus a map, which gives you the exact boundaries. Do we want to be exact, or do we want to have something that is usable, that is cognitively usable? Anyway, coming back to Sanimar. Sanimar is a Salmon Yoma Marine Aquatic Research Center. That building there has won an award for the best architectural design, I think globally, in that year, maybe in that class. Nothing in that building is plumb. Everything is straight. But nothing is plumb. If you look at that staircase to the right, it goes narrower to the top. The steps themselves are slanted. If you look to the kitchen, I put a cup on that lower shelf. It slid to the left. The middle shelf there was later refitted. What did the scientists do that need to work there? They built themselves a shed out the back. That's where they work and live, and they put the students in this brilliant building. And this really is my point. That building there is very accurate, it's very precise, but it's not very practical. And that's where I'm going to end it. Now I'm coming to why I'm here. Sorry, I'm halfway. In South Africa, we use soil classification, obviously, for agriculture. And this is an example just with precision farming. In this center pivot, there's a half that you're going to make a loss, and there's another half where you're going to make a profit. And if you can equal that out, address the fertility issues, you can increase your profit, and you can really double it. Another example with soil classification is really what we call the water table soils. These are soils with stagnic properties in the subsoil. Farmers demand a soil survey, while they obviously pay for it. Soils with stagnic properties, and they've got different names in South Africa, soils with stagnic properties sell for something like $4,000 a hectare. Soils without stagnic properties sell for $2,000 a hectare. And that is reflected in our classification. It's reflected in the water table soils. This is an example from, it's a wetland delineation exercise. This was a site, and I was told to use the mouse. Mm-hmm. This is a site for the Pan-African Parliament. I'm going to show you just now. Those of you that know Gauteng and Johannesburg, David, you've been there. This is the N1 running north-south. Pretoria is just to the north and Johannesburg to the south. That building there is the African Development Bank. So it's not a Mickey Mouse development. And if you use your imagination, you would be able to see the wetland in the center. Yet the botanist that did this wetland delineation was not able to see that wetland. They say, well, there's no wetland. And when they went in and dug out to create this building, they got stuck. And they phoned my friend, Jan van der Waals, and they said, well, you need to come and help us. How do we get rid of this water? And they said, well, you're in the middle of a wetland. They said, no, this is not a wetland, it's a burst pipe. And so it became a you say, I say, and eventually the thing turned up in court. And the soil science perspective won the court case. To such an extent that when wetland delineations are done now in South Africa, and specifically in Gauteng, where this is, if a soil scientist has not signed off on it, It's not accepted. So wetland delineations must now be done, or at least the soil scientists must be involved there. And once again, that's reflected in the classification. This is a study that's now sort of just not quite yet a year. And so the title of that study is Wetland Properties Conducive to the Estivation of Rift Valley Fever. So just of Rift Valley Fever affected mosquitoes. Rift Valley Fever is I've got 4 minutes now. Yeah. Need to speed it up. It's a viral zoonosis transmitted by mosquitoes and blood. It affects livestock and humans. And you can see there's significant deaths, even humans. But yet this disease recurs roughly every 10 years. So we've got some study sites, and we're basically just taking a shot in the dark, trying to find out, is there soil differences between areas where we do find Rift Valley Fever and not? And that's the kind of areas we're working. Those are not cattle, they're buffalo. So interesting people that contend with the wetlands for us, funded primarily by the U.S. Department of Defense, some other partners involved there. Then another study we started, which is peat. Why does peat accumulate in certain parts of South Africa and not in other parts? We have many areas that are considered wetlands, but yet we don't get peat accumulation in all of them. So we're going to study that basically throughout South Africa. And once again, you can see to the top right, that's a peat dome there, and then we need to contend with the elephant to get there. And it makes for interesting, because they rip out your instrumentation, and they will break your pipes up in small little pieces, and yeah, Erica, I've been there. We've done hydropedological studies. There's a very good relationship between our soil forms, which you see the names there, don't worry about the names, and the movement of water. We have this preoccupation with color in South Africa, and also with water. And there's a very good relationship, and this was my master's and PhD studies, between soil color and soil water in South Africa, obviously, and that relates back to hydropathology. Bloodhound, which is a land speed record attempt. Just look at the mass of that thing, 7 tons. Look at the size of it. I think it's been done there in Hartsveld, northwestern South Africa. There's a soil survey that was done. That's more or less what the soils look like. And just look at the rut that wheel leaves in the soil. So this is once again my colleague Johan van der Waals. He's asking this question to you. Similar attempts at salt flats in Utah and Black Rock has really resulted in degradation of that soil surface to such an extent that these speed records cannot be done there anymore. Is there anybody that has any experience on the recovery and impacts of that land speed record? Because obviously we do not want to repeat the mistakes that were done there. I'm going to skip through this open cast mining rehabilitation. I want to plug my conference in the last minute. The 5th International Soil Classification Conference. Erica, you plug the real one. I'm going to plug this one. The 5th International Soil Classification Conference will be held next year from the 1st to the 7th of December. 2016, obviously, and it's going to be preceded by a field workshop from Pretoria to Bloemfontein, which is 1 to 4 December, and the conference that follows that will be 5 to 7 December, and that's exactly to coincide with Erica's birthday. It's got nothing to do with the World Soil Day. So this is just, you're going to fly into Johannesburg, and we're going to start in Pretoria to Lichtenburg. In Pretoria, we will look at urban soils. Lichtenburg, we will look at agricultural soils. Potchefstroom, we're going to look at some mine-impacted soils. We're going to drive through the Vredefort Dome, meteorite-impacted site, Sasselburg, and then we'll go down to Bloemfontein. And that's it. Thank you, Jay.
Very good. Thank you.